Jess.
I've just realised,
Nick says, looking at his watch.
I've actually got to get going. Sorry, I know you wanted to use the computer.
Oh, I say, a little thrown. No worries. Maybe you could lend me your code? I'll see if I can get on the Wi-Fi from up there.
Sure.
He suddenly looks very eager to be gone. Maybe he's late for something. What is it? I ask. Work. I've been wondering what he does for a living. Everything about this guy says money, but whispers it rather than shouts it. As I've been looking around his place, I've noticed some very swanky-looking speakers, Bang and Olufsen. I'll look it up later, but I can just tell they're expensive. A fancy camera, Leica. A massive screen in the corner, Apple. And that professional-looking coffee machine. But you have to really look to see the wealth. Nick's are the possessions of someone who is loaded, but doesn't want to boast about it. Might even be a little embarrassed by it. But they tell a story, as do the books on his shelves. The titles that I can understand, anyway. Fast Forward Investing. The Technologized Investor. Catching a Unicorn. The Science of Self-Discipline. As did the stuff in his bathroom. I spent about 3 seconds splashing my face with cold water, and the rest of the time having a good root through his cabinets. You can learn a lot about someone from their bathroom. I learned this when I was taken to meet prospective foster families. No one's ever going to stop you if you ask to use the toilet. I go in there, poke around, sometimes nick a lipstick or a bottle of perfume, sometimes explore the rooms on the way back, find out if they were concealing anything scary or weird. In Nick's bathroom, I found all the usual. Mouthwash, toothpaste, aftershaves, paracetamol, posh toiletries with names like Aesop and Byredo. And then, interesting, quite a large supply of oxycodone. Everyone has their poison. I get that. I dabbled with some stuff back in the day, when it felt like it might be easier to stop caring about anything. To just kind of slip out the back door of life. It wasn't for me, but I get it. And I guess rich boys feel pain too.
I'm, well, between jobs at the moment.
Nick says, what were you doing before? I ask, reluctantly moving away from the desk. I'm fairly certain his last job didn't involve working in a dive with inflatable palm trees and flamingos dangling from the ceiling.
I was in San Francisco for a while. Palo Alto. Tech startups. An angel, you know?
No?
An investor.
Oh. It must be nice to be so casual about looking for work. Clearly, between jobs doesn't mean that he's scrabbling for cash. He squeezes past me to get to the doorway. I've been blocking his way, and being a nice posh English boy, he's probably too polite to ask me to budge. I smell his cologne as he does. Smoky and expensive and delicious. The same one I had a spray of in his bathroom. Oh, I say. Sorry. I'm holding you up.
It's okay.
But I get the impression he's not as relaxed as he sounds. Something in his posture, perhaps. A tightness about his jaw. Well, thanks for your help.
Look, he says, I'm sure it's nothing to worry about. But I'm still keen to help. Anything I can do. Any questions I can answer? I'll try to.
There is one thing, I say. Do you know if Ben's seeing anyone? He frowns.
Seeing anyone?
Yeah, like a girlfriend or something more casual.
Why do you ask?
Just a hunch. It's not like me to be prudish, but there's something in me that gets the ick at describing the knickers I found in Ben's bed. Hmm. He puts a hand up to his hair and runs his fingers through it, which only makes his curls stand out more messily. He's beautiful. Yes, all my focus is on finding Ben, but I'm also not blind. I've always had a stupid weakness for a polite posh boy. I'm not saying I'm proud of it.
Not that I know of, he says, finally. I don't think he has a girlfriend, but I suppose I don't know everything about his life here in Paris. I mean, we'd kind of fallen out of touch before he arrived here.
Yeah, I know how that is.
But that's just like Ben, isn't it?
Nick had said just before.
He's always been like that, since we were students.
And all I could think was, is he? Has he? And if he was always rushing off at the drop of a hat when he was at Cambridge, how did he not find more time to come and see me? He was always saying he was
so busy with essays,
or
I can't miss any of my tutorials. You know how it is.
But I didn't, of course. He knew I didn't. One of the only times he came to see me, I was fostering in Milton Keynes at the time, was when I suggested a trip to Cambridge. I had an inkling that the threat of his scuzzy foster kid sister turning up and damaging his image might work. Thinking about it, I feel a little spike of something that I hope is anger, not hurt. Hurt is the worst.
Sorry not to be more use,
Nick says.
But if you need me, I'm right here, just one floor down.
Our eyes meet. His are a very dark blue, not the brown I'd taken them for. I tried to see past the little tug of attraction. Can I trust this guy? He's Ben's mate. He says he's keen to help. The problem is, I'm not good at trusting people. I've been used to fending for myself for too long. But Nick could be useful. He knows Ben, apparently better than I do, in some ways. He clearly speaks French. He seems like a decent guy. I think of weird, jumpy Mimi and frosty Sophie Meunier. It's nice to think someone in this building might be a useful ally. I watch as he pulls on a smart navy wool coat, wraps a soft-looking grey scarf around his neck. He goes to the door and opens it for me.
It's nice to meet you, Jess,
he says, with a small smile. He looks like a painting of an angel. I don't know where the thought comes from. Maybe it's because he used the word himself just now. But I know that it's right. Perfect, even. A fallen angel. It's the dark gold curls, those purple shadows under his navy eyes. Mum had a thing about angels, too. She was always telling me and Ben, we all have one looking out for us. Shame hers didn't seem up to the job.
And look,
Nick says,
I'm sure Ben will turn up.
Thanks. I think so too. I try to believe it.
Here, let me give you my number.
That'd be great. I give him my phone. He puts his details in. As I take it from him, our fingers brush, and he quickly drops his hand. Back up in Ben's apartment, I'm relieved to find I can get onto Nick's Wi-Fi using the password he gave me. I head to Ben's Instagram and look for Nick Miller, the name he's put in my phone. But I can't see him among Ben's followers. I try a more general search and get Nick Millers from all over the place. The States, Canada, Australia. I look through them until my eyes sting. But they're too young, too old, too bald, from the wrong country. Google is useless too. There's some fictional guy called Nick Miller from a TV show that fills all the Google results. I give up. Just as I'm about to put it back in my pocket, my phone vibrates with a text. And for a moment I think, Ben. It's from Ben. How amazing would that be, after all this? It's from an unknown number. Got your message about Ben. Haven't heard from the guy, but he promised me a couple of pieces of work and a pitch. I'm working at the Belle Epoque Cafe, next to the Jardin de Luxembourg, all day. You can meet me here. Tea. I'm confused for a moment. Then I scroll up to my message above, and I realize it's the guy I texted earlier. I take Ben's wallet out of my back pocket to remind me of his full name. Theo Mendelssohn, Paris editor, Guardian. I'm coming now, I text back. Just before I slide the card back into the wallet, I notice another one sitting behind it. It catches my eye because it's so simple, so unusual. Made from metal, it's a dark midnight blue with an image like an exploding firework, picked out in gold. No text or numbers or anything. Not a credit card. Not a business card either, surely. Then what? I hesitate. Feel the surprising weight of it in my palm. Then pocket it. When I open the door that leads onto the courtyard, I realize it's already starting to get dark. The sky the color of an old bruise. When did that happen? I haven't noticed the hours passing. This place has swallowed time, like something from a fairy tale. As I walk through the courtyard, I hear a sound close by. A rasping, scritch, scritch, scritch. I turn and start as I see a small, stooped figure standing only a couple of meters away to my right. It's the old woman, the one I saw last night. She wears a scarf tied about her grey hair and some sort of long, shapeless cardigan over an apron. Her face is all nose and chin, hollow eye sockets. She could be anything from 70 to 90. She's holding a broom, which she's using to sweep dead leaves into a heap. Her eyes are fixed on me. Bonsoir. I say to her, have you seen Ben? From the third floor? I point up to the windows of the apartment, but she just keeps on sweeping. Scritch, scritch, scritch. All the while watching me. Then she steps even closer, her eyes on me the whole time, barely even blinking. But just once, quickly, she looks up at the apartment building, as though checking for something. Then she opens her mouth and speaks in a low hiss, a sound not unlike the rasping of those dead leaves.
There is nothing for you here.
I stare at her. What do you mean? She shakes her head, and then she turns and walks away, goes back to her sweeping. It all happened so quickly, I could almost believe I imagined the whole thing. Almost. I stare after her stooped, retreating figure. For Christ's sake, it feels like everyone I meet in here is speaking in riddles. Except Nick, maybe. I have this sudden, almost violent urge to run up to her and, I don't know, shake her or something. Force her to tell me what she means. I swallow my frustration. When I turn to open the gate, I'm sure I can feel her gaze across my shoulder blades, definite as the touch of fingertips. And as I step onto the street, I can't help but wonder, was that a warning or a threat?